Okay, guys, today's learning is in memory of Chaim Tzvi Eliezer Ben Dalia. This is Max and Henry Kofler's grandfather's yahrzeit. So the learning today and this year in particular, I guess, are in memory of him and his zchut. For Shir colleagues, so the topic is Thanks for Nothing. We should decide how to understand the topic. But we're going to try to do two different topics in halacha in the over the course of the next 55 minutes or so. I think that there is some connection between the two methodologically, okay? And I think at their face, they're not really connected. One is the topic of Birkat HaGomel, and one is the topic of Patabah B'Kisnin. They're both the topic of Brachot, but I think you'll understand, I'll try to make more explicit as well, the methodological connection in terms of how we analyze the proper halacha in both of those cases. We'll take them one by one, and I hope you get a sense of that. And I think it's a little bit illuminating. Hopefully you'll find the halacha illuminating in the discussion, but also in terms of how we go about sometimes analyzing halachic sources as well. Okay, well, starting with Gemara and Bracha. This is Gemara and Bracha that I think I've actually mentioned to you guys before. Gemara says in Bracha, Daf Gendala, the event, source number one, Amar Abida Marav Arba'at Shrichim Lahudot. There are four people who have to give thanks. Now, the context originally for this idea actually really is the Korban Todah in the Beit HaMikdash. But for our purposes, in the context of Bracha, what's the Bracha that replaces the Korban Todah? You may know. It should be here. Yeah? Birkat HaGomel. Okay? Birkat HaGomel. Okay, so there's four people who would be subject to the Birkat HaGomel that have to thank Hashem publicly. It says like this. Yordei Hayam, people who travel on the sea. Hochei Midbarot, people who travel through the desert. Mishaya Cholev Nitrapei, somebody who was ill and became healed. Umishaya Chavush Beit Asurin, and somebody who was captive in jail. Okay? So I asked you on the page, I have questions. So what is it about these four cases that require one to recite Birkat HaGomel? What is it? Do they have something in common? Something with it. Yeah, Benny.
I don't know if it's life and
death situation. Okay, so it certainly sounds perhaps like life and death situations. That's for sure. It does sound like that. Okay? I think the question we're going to want to ask ourselves is, this is really like the methodological point, when you have a list like this, is the list exclusive, or is the list meant to be examples of something that then give us a broader perspective? Okay? So for example, let's say I have an experience where I go on the sea, but it's a Carnival cruise line, a kosher Carnival cruise line, right? And well, I guess you can get food poisoning and have the boat sing also, that also does happen, but generally people wouldn't spend lots of money to go on a vacation if they thought they were going to perish in the sea. So you go on a cruise, and I go around the Bahamas, whatever, who knows where I go, I go to Greece. Would I have to recite Birkat HaGomel upon my return? Right? I didn't experience anything other than lots of food and relaxation. Is there any reason to recite Birkat HaGomel? Now, after all, it is in the Gemara, it is on the list, right? Your Dei Hayam, but I didn't experience actual danger. On the flip side, let's say I did experience danger, but it wasn't in the sea, and it wasn't in the desert. It was somewhere else. Maybe it was in a park somewhere, and I experienced danger. Maybe life-threatening danger, as Benny said. Would I recite Birkat HaGomel, or do I say, no, well, that's not what the examples are. It's not examples. Maybe it's a very specific list. If you don't make it on the list, for technical reasons, the halacha maybe says I wouldn't recite Birkat HaGomel. You hear the question? So that's really what we want to tease out a little bit for the following sources, is that what's the nature of Birkat HaGomel? So look at the Abu Draham. Sefer Abu Draham says as follows, Katav Rabbeinu Gershom Rabbi Shlomo. That's the following brief story. Pam echad kam echad mehamon ha'ir, she'ira nes libno. So there's a certain guy in the shul, and his son experienced a miracle. U'birech bebeit ha'kneset ha'gomel. So he wanted to make Birkat HaGomel, so he made a Birkat HaGomel. V'ani ga'arti bo. What does ga'arti mean? What? Admonish, I screamed at him, like I yelled at him. You made two mistakes in reciting Birkat HaGomel. U'birech bracha l'batalah. And the worst thing you can do in brachot is to make a bracha l'batalah. Right? Unnecessary. Hata'ut ha'rishon ge'afidu al neis atzmo eno chayav l'birech ha'gomel. If you experience a miracle, the bracha, the proper bracha for miracles is not ha'gomel. What's the proper bracha for miracles? What's that? Sha'asalines. Right? Ela b'rech ha'asalines. So in Cain, shalom kedim birech she'asam matbeah habracha shnitkan ladeis. U'birech barcha acheres shalom nitkana. Ela ba'arba'at shrichim lahodot. And he made a whole nother bracha, which is only instituted for the four people who are mentioned that have to actually give thanks. So for Rabbeinu Gershom, just in a small quote from Rabbeinu Gershom, what's your sense of his understanding of the four cases? Is it, yes, Benny? It sounds much more literal, right? It sounds like if you're not one of the four cases, then you don't make Birkata Gomel. Right? That's what it sounds like. It's a very limited room. I mean, again, you can understand such an opinion. Now, let's look at the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi in Bracho says like this, Rabbi Shimma Bar Abba B'Shem Rabbi Rav Chista, Kol Drachim B'Cheskat Sakana. All the Drachim, all the roads have a Chazaka. What does Chazaka mean in halachic terminology? Assumption of Sakana, of danger. If you travel on the roads, the assumption is you're in danger. Okay? Look, apparently their roads weren't very safe. What are the different reasons why their roads would not be safe? Maybe number one reason, what? Yeah, probably people attacking you. We call those like bandits or something, right? At least steam, the Gemara talks about it, right? Probably bandits, people attacking you. It's not a safe neighborhood, right? I remember when I was, when I went to college, I went to YU. So when I got to YU, it was just in the time when the neighbor was changing. Okay, that used to be the neighbor was like really kind of a tough neighborhood. It's very difficult. And at least that was reputation. And the neighbor was just changing to be a little more safe. So I have a friend who was told by his parents, he had a car on campus, and he used to drive up to 181st Street, and his parents told him, if you get to a red light and somebody approaches your car, that used to happen all the time, people approach your car, they want to sell you oranges, it's not really oranges, it's cocaine, and yeah, whatever. So if somebody approaches your car, run the red light. That's what I said, just run the red light. I don't want you to, I don't know if it's really cocaine, that's what he used to say. Okay, but he says, run the red light. I don't want you to deal with that. I don't want you to have to suffer.
Ronnie, okay. You're maligning my hometown.
I know, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. But he didn't live on 181st Street in Amsterdam. So he was very nervous, right? So kol drachim b'chazkat sakana. Sometimes you have there's a reputation that the road is very dangerous. Okay, what does that mean? The Rush says as follows. V'nahagu ba'ashkenaz b'ritzavat. So the Rush is addressing this Yerushalmi. So presumably what he understood the Yerushalmi to be telling us is that because the roads are very unsafe and it's considered to be sakana, then you wouldn't have to bench Birkata Gomel essentially every time you travel. But the Rush says the minhag in Ashkenaz was not to do so. You don't make Birkata Gomel. Again, we have to say that our minhag is not to do that. The implication is there was a minhag in many places that you would do that. Make sense? Right? So he says, we don't do that. Why? Disvir lahu, or they don't. Disvir lahu deloit srichu lahodot ala hochein mi barot, dishchichi behu chayot ra'ot vilistim. Because he said that the original institution in the Gemara was to say Birkata Gomel when you're traveling in the desert. Why? Why? Because in the desert, what do you find? Chayot ra'ot vilistim. What's chayot ra'ot vilistim? Wild animals and bandits. So that's why they said, midbar, you have to do it. And when the Yerushalmi said that all the roads are b'cheskat sakana, lom ru'al l'inyan tefilat ha'derech bilvad, shekol ha'drachim tzarich adam l'vekesh rachamim alav shol. Ve'pekato gomel b'makom korban todah itkin. He says, no, when it comes to the issue of sakana drachim, that was for a different tefilah that we say. That's called tefilat ha'derech. Tefilat ha'derech is very different from Birkata Gomel. Birkata Gomel, you're only going to recite when you're in a situation that's inherently dangerous. But, well, when it comes to any travel on the roads, you say what's called Tfilat Hadera. You always want to have a safe journey. And that's what you can do. Yeah. Yes, so I think what the Rush would say would be something slightly different. Explain, maybe you want to say yourself. What would be the difference between Tfilat HaDerech and Birkata Gomel? Why are they not just two sides of the same coin? And why is it Tfilat HaDerech before, Birkata Gomel after? Well, okay. Yeah, one's you're looking for protection. General safety you're always hoping for, right? Whenever you're on an airplane, you're thinking, oh, I hope this is a safe flight. But after the fact, when is it appropriate to say Birkata Gomel? Only if what, apparently, the Rush is saying? Only if, is that the saying? Only if you actually experienced danger, or maybe you were in a place which is inherently really dangerous. If it's inherently really dangerous, so then maybe you do it. That's what the Midbar is about. The Midbar seems to be about a place where there's really dangerous animals around and bandits. Like, it's a really scary place to go. But if you're traveling on the roads in Sarfat, And then Ashkenaz apparently wasn't so dangerous. Of course, it's tefillah tederach, but it's not like to say birkat hagom. That's not inherently dangerous. Yes.
He's giving a more inclusive reading, saying that if you're in a dangerous situation, you should say
gomah,
not necessarily
for the cases. So that's a good question. Would you not say it for the other four cases? But it sounds like you're saying that. I think the first thing sounds correct. That if you experience danger, that's when you would do it. Yes, not exclusive. The question would be like, again, I think there's two sides of that question, right? One is, are the four cases exclusive? Meaning, can there be other situations where you experience danger where you would make a goval, even if it's not those four things? And then the question is, well, if I go through those four things but I didn't experience danger, could I maybe not say Birkat HaGomel? That's an important question too. Joe.
But the
right.
So how are they able to be overlapped?
They're not overlapping. It's just a question of tefillah tederach. It's a much more generalized type of tefillah that you can say on certain specific journeys, but almost any journey you can say tefillah tederach. Whereas Birkat HaGomel is only after the fact, in certain circumstances, do you actually have to express explicit thanks for essentially saving your life. Right, what's the text of Birkat HaGomel? HaGomel l'chayavim tovot shekvalani kotov. So what does it mean, gomel? What's gomel? Well, not really say, but what? It's not like goel, that's goel. It's like gbilut chasadim, it's like bestowing upon, right? Gomel lachayavim. What's a chayav? What's a chayav? What's chayav mean? Well, it's been an obligation, but in terms of like, if you go through court and you're certain that you're a chayav, you are liable, right? Liable. So hagomel lachayavim tobo, meaning a person can be chayav. When you say a person's chayav, it means I owe Hashem something. If I'm chayav, it means Hashem should punish me. That's the idea. But he's gomel l'chayavim tovot. Instead of giving me, making me suffer what I really deserve, instead Hashem gave me tovot, good things. Right? If a dangerous situation is a great way for Hashem, through natural means, to punish a person who wants to give punishment to, if you want to think that way, right? But gomel l'chayavim, instead of that, I got tovot. Wow, I'm so appreciative. Shekbalani kotob, he bestowed upon me all this good. Right? I was in a situation that was so dangerous. That's what I'm asking Hashem for. And that's what we respond, right? And he should continue to do that. Okay. Let's look at the Me'iri. The Me'iri quotes this Yesh Misha Omer in source number 5. It says, Yesh Misha Omer She'en Adrem Halalu Amarim Ela Behochei Midbarot She'ta'u Ve'yordei Hayam She'amad Aleyem Nachshol She'bayam Ve'chole She'yesh Mo'sakana. It says, some say that this list, even this list, right? The Me'iri on Brachot, on this Gemara, right? This list is only when what? Anyone understand what he said there? Only when you experience what, Yoni?
Actual danger.
Going through the sea itself is not a reason to say Birkat HaGomel according to the Yesh Misha Omer. What has to happen, Yoni, when you're in the sea?
Your ship sunk.
Maybe not sunk, but something very scary, right? Something has to go wrong. Right, you got lost in the desert. That's very dangerous. Right, those are the situations. You get sick. It's not a regular sickness. It's a cholei sheyesh bo sakana. You're deathly ill. That's when you say Birkat HaGomel. If you don't say Birkat HaGomel, you wouldn't say Birkat HaGomel for the other. If you don't experience that, so Ezra, that comes back to your question, right? This Yesh Misha Omer is saying that you can even experience one of those four things, but if your personal experience wasn't that you were endangered. So okay, so congratulations, it worked out well for you. There's no reason to say Birkat HaGomel. Okay? So it could be you went to jail, and your experience in jail was very pleasant. You know? It just, everything worked out great. No one ever threatened your life, and no one ever, beat you up. No one ever wanted to do anything to you. It's just, you have to go to the library every day, and you sat behind the bars and watched cable TV. And then, so if that happened, according to this, you wouldn't have to say Birkat HaGomel. Okay? And that's what we see a little bit in the Shulchan Aruch source number 6. He says as follows, Hami arba lav davka. These four things are lav davka. How would you translate lav davka?
Not specific.
It's not necessarily these four things. To who did the Mishnah Solonis? The same for anybody who experiences some type of miraculous salvation. Kigoshina fala lav kotel. Maybe a wall fell on you. Oh, nitso midrisat shore in the hotel. Maybe you were in the rodeo and a bull stepped on you, but you survived. Osha Amadala Beir Aryelo Tarfo, or maybe you came into contact with a lion. Remember that story with the guy with the lion? He killed the lion with the bare hands. Remember that story a couple years ago? what I'm talking about? A couple years ago, there, what? Yeah, but still, you know, line's a line, right? So he, so you have an experience with a line, and you're saved. Oh, in Ganavim Baulo, in Shidoshod, they lie over you, sold him. You have some robbers, you know, come to the house, and you're saved. So that's not on the list. But Kol Koyosef is a Kulam Shrichim Levarech HaGomel. You all these things require Bekat HaGomel. Because it's not these things Dafka, it means any situation in your life is threatened. Those are just four examples of that. V'yesh Omrim She'em Levarechim HaGomel Elahani Arba Dafka V'tol Levarech V'lo Shem Umachla. Some say it's only those four things Dafka. And not anything else. And here you see the Shulchan Aruch lays it out exactly the way we're saying. Is it Dafka or Lav Dafka? That's really the question. Okay, so just in terms of applying this to a more modern-day situation that's very common, an interesting machloket is, what's the status then of airplane travel? What is it of airplane? I know a lot of people do fly in airplanes and do very, in some certain circumstances, the custom is to say Birkat HaGomel. Anybody want to suggest that you're, what you normally do or what you think people normally do when you fly in an airplane? What's the situation where you say Birkat HaGomel? Jeremy? What's that? Oh, Jeremy's saying, if you experience turbulence, maybe you do Birkat HaGomel. Is that true? Did you say Birkat HaGomel if you experience turbulence?
Maybe
you
should.
Maybe you should, okay. Yeah.
No.
Okay, so many people, when they cross the Atlantic, they come to Israel or from Israel, right? Then they will make Birkat HaGomel because they've crossed the sea. Usually because they've crossed the sea. That's the idea. Many people will say such a thing. Why would they do such a thing? Why would they do that? So I think you do it because of Gemara Bracha, right? Yes, yeah, yeah. Okay, great. Okay, so just in contrast to what you just said, I'm going to show you Rav Moshe Feinstein's tshuva, and then we'll see the Tzitzelezer, and we'll discuss something else, okay? So the Rav Moshe Feinstein's tshuva here, source number 7, he's talking about flying in an airplane, and he suggests as follows. I'm going to summarize it. I'm not going to read it inside, but I'll summarize it, okay? He essentially says like this. When it comes to this list of the four situations where you bench Birkat HaGomel, so those are paradigms, okay? They're not exclusively that list. They're paradigms. What are they paradigms of? They're paradigms of situations which inherently are dangerous. So he doesn't say that, for example, going over the sea, he doesn't think you have to actually have a storm and survive some terrible calamity to bench HaGomel. Going through the sea is inherently dangerous. Why is it dangerous, he says? It's an interesting svara. He says because what would happen if your boat were to disappear when you're in the ocean? Could a human being survive in the ocean on their own? No. What happens if you're traveling the desert and your camel dies or your caravan breaks down? You're done. I mean, you're done for, right? You can't survive in the desert, again, barring outside help. You can't survive. It's a place that's inherently a place where you can't survive. Okay, and that's the paradigm he uses. That they are, in some ways, they're dafka. They're dafka in the sense that they are locations where humans can't survive on their own, and it takes almost like an act of God, right? If you were to survive, he says the same thing is true of airplanes. If you fly in an airplane, you're traveling at 25,000-30,000 feet in the air. That is not a place that's filled with humans. Did you ever look at the monitor that tells us like all the different things about like the airspeed and things like that, like how cold it is up there? How cold is it outside the airplane when you're 30,000 feet in the air? It's like negative 50 Celsius or something. Like it's ridiculously cold. There's no way. Right? When I was a kid, so there was a Wonder Woman cartoon. What you know? What Wonder Woman's mode of transportation was? Oh, you guys know. It's so cool. Invisible plane. The invisible plane. So I always think of the invisible plane when I think of this from Moshe Tshuva. He said, "Let's say your plane became just invisible." So he used to show her in the cartoon, like, she's flying the plane. So she's, like, got the plane, but there's, like, nothing around her. She's just, like, you know, just going, you know? So I think, like, what, you know, and then the cartoons, what happens when, if, let's say her plane disappeared. So what happens in the cartoon when you're just, like, over the air and you're just, like, you're, everything's fine until you look down. And you look down and then you fall. So if that would happen, the remotion says, if that would happen, you're done for. And therefore, he says, the plane, on the one hand, he sort of straddles our two ways of looking at things. The plane represents this situation where you're inherently in danger because the environment is not supportive of human life. So even though you don't experience any physical danger in the moment, you would have to make hagomel. And that's why Reb Moshe Paskins, Lemaisa, that you would have to make hagomel on every single plane flight. You want to go from New York to Boston, it's a flight you're up and down in 25 minutes, I don't know, 35 minutes? You make hagomel, because once you're going that high, you experienced danger. Okay? Again, even though not practical danger, but fundamentally that's what you did. So that's his chiddush, I think, a little bit. That's how he understands how that sugya works. Yes, Akiva.
I'm thinking like I can't think of a great example to try to make for like what that might compare to. It's my crazy, but I was thinking a slippery slope. If you have a bunch of food and then all of your food suddenly disappears, bam, you die.
Right.
If you go mal every day, like if you're swimming and you get up to gasp for air.
Right, so I think the svara of difference would be that there's a big difference between the anxiety, let's say, that some people feel when they're flying. Like, people do have anxiety when they fly. It's a little bit irrational, the anxiety, right? It's a little bit irrational, but it is natural. And I think that, to me, explains a little bit more about what Rabosha's svara is. Why do people get nervous when they're in an airplane? They get nervous because if something goes wrong, you're done. There's no way that, right? It's not like, if the plane crashes, like, I'll probably be okay, you know. No, you probably won't. You know what I mean? As opposed to, like, maybe I'll say to my little child, don't run so fast, you could trip and fall. Right? You shouldn't run very fast. And God forbid, there could be, like, we can imagine scenarios where, like, a person can trip and fall and terrible things could happen. But generally speaking, it's not really such a big concern, right? Because fundamentally, like, things are going to be okay. Right? That's, I think, what he's saying. Like, you know, in those sort of situations, okay? If you look at the Tzitz Eliezer, so he says, he gives the standard explanation, which is, well, if you're traveling and you go over the Midbar, so then you have to make Berakat HaGomel. If you travel over the sea, you bet Berakat HaGomel. So he's a little more of a literalist, right? This list, Davka, if you do these things, yes. Other than those two things, no. So if you're traveling in an airplane and you don't cross the sea, or you don't cross the desert, there'd be no need to bench HaGomel. One question is interesting, although I just stopped at this second, is that he talks about long plane flights. The truth is that I gave you this situation of like the example of like Boston to New York. I'm pretty sure when you fly Boston to New York, you're going out over the Atlantic and coming back. So it is interesting. I think you technically do go over like a very large body of water and you're pretty far out. It just occurred to me. I don't know. I'll leave it there. It's our theme. Yeah.
How does
Our emotion? It's a good question. Look, you could say that the Beit HaSurim is the way they treat you there is so inherently bad that it's just a dangerous place. By analogy, I would say like that what we should never know from it, but they say that going to state prison is fun nowadays is so dangerous. Like it's terrifying. Like going to state, like, it's very hard. Now the percentages don't add up there. Right, it's not really true that if you go to state prison, you have a high percentage that you're going to be killed or something like that. But the way they talk about it sounds terrible. Federal prison, not so bad, right? As things go, but state prison, they say it's really bad. I imagine through that, like you know, exponentially, it probably was really. You probably, if you finally went to prison, you thought you'd never see them again. So it could be that you had a good experience, you know, but probably not. That's how I imagine it. Yes, that's right. Yeah, so Rav Soloveitchik, I didn't have a print because Rav Soloveitchik didn't write it up. Rav Soloveitchik, at least we understand, he felt that you don't make Berakat HaGomel on airplane travel because, as Ali pointed out, airplane travel is the safest way to travel. It's the safest form of transportation percentage-wise. So there's no reason at all to make Berakat HaGomel unless, God forbid, something really went wrong. So then, you know, like any situation like that, you make Berakat HaGomel, presumably. Right? But that's the counterbalance to that. Yeah, okay.
So we determine to save your cardiovascular sickness was inherently life threatening, and how would you determine that? Because it seems like there's almost a level of severity to
for life. Sure that yes, I think you're asking a practical question.
Yeah.
Look, I think it's debatable. I think that different people do different things. I'll give you an example. Like my father, thank God, is doing well, but he hurt his back a little while ago, and he finally made that just like months ago, and he finally like was able to like walk to shul this past Shabbos and got to go to shul. So it's like great. It's like, oh, we're so excited. And then in the Gabbai, they gave him an aliyah, and the Gabbai said to him, do you want to bench Gomel? Now, he wasn't in like a life-threatening accident, but it was just impaired his ability to move around. So he wasn't sure if he should say Birkat HaGomel or not. It's a good question. The rabbi happened to not be. I think the rabbi was at the different minyan, whatever it was. And so the guy said, you know what we'll do? I just traveled from Eretz Yisrael. I'll make HaGomel and I'll have you in mind. You can be Yotzei just in case. That's what they did, right? It's a good question. Those situations, I think it's debatable. And different posts might say slightly different things. You know, having to, you know, getting, you know, you have strep throat. If you don't treat strep throat, it's quite dangerous. So I don't think we normally treat it that way. I don't think people bench HaGomel because of strep throat. On the other hand, if you end up in the ICU, God forbid, I think we do bench HaGomel, right? So I think it's there's some, you know, to figure that out. Yeah, good.
And then also with remotion, like, let's say because if somebody's allergic to bees and then they got stung by bee, it's not inherent what's in bees that there is danger. It's subjective.
I can't tell you. I can't tell you. I can't speak for Rav Moshe. I don't know. My sense for Rav Moshe is that this specific tshuva is about sort of how you define midbar and yam. But I would imagine he would agree that if a person suffers some type of life-threatening situation, he would also bench HaGomel. I think he's just trying to say that there are situations that are more inherent, even when you don't. That's the bigger finish, right? Even when you don't actually experience danger, would you still have to bench HaGomel? He says yes. Because in that sense, this list is Davka. Right? Yes.
I'm not sure about this is right now, but I would.
Yeah. Yeah. Classic example is a woman after giving birth with bench HaGomel. Okay? Yeah.
The rabbis are setting, or the person we're setting the bar for kind of, there is a kind of, you would say, HaGomel, or how do they kind of straddle that with the Chagahem, like intentionally putting yourself in some way?
Okay, so that's a good question. I wasn't really going to get into that. It's a great question. Like, you're asking, like, are you allowed to put yourself in a situation that, therefore, is dangerous that you have to then bench a gomel? So I think that this does come up sometimes, posting talk about this, that, like, clearly, if you're having a birkat ha-gomel for going in the sea, there must have been justification to go for a journey in the sea. Right, so that's a different question. So they're like, what risky situations are you allowed to put yourself in? Like, I think group two, right, if you have me on Thursday nights, I think we talked about that, right? Risky situations, right? So we have sorts like that. Like, you know, for professional reasons, sometimes you have to take a journey, you know? It is what it is, but you have to sustain your family. So you'll put yourself in a mildly dangerous situation in order to risk that. At a certain point, the risk factors go up so high, you probably say, I can't even do it. Okay. That's a fair question. Okay, I want, yeah, sorry, last question. Then we'll switch gears. Interesting. I have to think that through all the way, but it sounds like an interesting story. Nice. Okay. Okay, let's switch gears, guys, completely. Okay, I'm going to switch the total topic to Patabah B'Kisnin. Now, Patabah B'Kisnin is an interesting brach l'shaila. The only link between Patabah B'Kisnin and the previous shaila is that on airplanes, they often serve you mizonot rolls. And maybe that's where the shaila comes up. So what's a Patabah B'Kisnin? So Patabah B'Kisnin, the Gemara defines, or I shouldn't say defines, explains as follows. Look in source number 9. It's Gemara and brach says like this. Rav Yehuda haba asik le lebrei, bei Ravina bar chaviva. Rav Yehuda was making a wedding for his son. Guys, you like Gemara jokes? You guys like Gemara jokes?
Yeah.
It's going to be a great Gemara play on word joke here, so you have to really pay attention to it. And when I give you the cue, you'll laugh, okay? Okay, here we go. I do the Kamayo Patabah B'Kisnin. They brought before these people Patabah B'Kisnin. It's not a joke yet. Come on, I'll give you the cue, I said. Okay? They brought Patabah B'Kisnin. So Rav Blan knows the Gemara, so he knows where the joke is coming. Okay? So we don't know what Patabah B'Kisnin is. Let's say for now, we'll say it's bread-like things. Okay, Kiato, when he came in the room, Shaminu de Kamavar Hamotzi. He heard them. Well, I think that's it. I'm anticipating the joke. So he heard them making Hamotzi. So Amar Lahu, he says, My Tzitzi de Kashamana. You get it? Okay, what's the joke? Tzitzi is Tzitzi, Hamotzi. So he said, Tzitzi. Did I hear Tzitzi just now? Like, did I hear Hamotzi? That's a joke. Thank you, Jakey. I appreciate it. It's not my joke. It's Rav Yehuda's joke. That's great. He said, what's this season? Dilma hamotzi milachem min ha'aretz mevarchito? You're making hamotzi? Okay. Amar lei in. They said, yes, we are making hamotzi. T'tanya Rabbi Muna amar mishim Rabbi Yehuda patabah b'kisnin varchan al hamotzi. For amar shmuel halacha Rabbi Muna. Rabbi Muna says, the halacha is, on patabah b'kisnin, you make hamotzi. And that's the halacha. Amar lei, no. You got it all wrong, he says. Ain't halacha Rabbi Muna itmar. He said the halacha is not like Rabbi Muna. You don't make that. But you said that on Lachmaniyot, which apparently is also Bata Bapikisnin, you're supposed to make a motzi, so you're contradicting yourself. On the one hand, you're saying the bracha on Bata Bapikisnin is not a motzi, but you yourself said on Bata Bapikisnin, the bracha is a motzi. So what's that? It's a contradiction. So what is the answer? Shani hatam de kavasudate alayu. The difference is, he says, with Kviyat Suda. What's Kviyat Suda? Establishing a meal. Now, if you make a meal on Pat Baba Kisnin, then you would make hamotzi. If not, you don't make hamotzi. And apparently, at the wedding, they weren't making that the meal, and therefore they shouldn't have made a hamotzi. Okay? So what exactly is Pat Baba Kisnin, and why would you or wouldn't you make hamotzi? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. What is Pat Baba Kisnin? Okay, so we have three different opinions we're going to see to define for us what Pata Baba Kisnin is. So the first opinion is source number 10. Source number 10 is the Chiddush Rashba. The Rashba says like this. Pata Baba Kisnin, the Heinekugan Uvlayish, for Otana Asuyin Kimin Kisin, Shimamalino Tom Bedvash, Ushkedim, Umineve Samim. It's some type of pastry, okay, some type of bread-like food, okay, bread-like, let's say, in the sense that it's made from flour and some type of liquid, okay. But it's like the word kisnin is like the word kis. What's a kis? A pocket. So you fill it with stuff. What are you filling it with? Honey, nuts, spices, all sorts of things to make it taste good. Okay? Why is that bread-like? What makes it bread-like? I even have to ask a question. Maybe it's like bread. Flour and water, or rises, whatever. What makes it not like bread? What makes it not like bread? Yeah, stuff is stuff. If you buy a loaf of bread in the store, if they had all this stuff in it, right? If you want to have a salami sandwich, what does this sound like, by the way? What does this thing sound like? You inside the bread, inside the dough, you put all these sorts of things. What? Like a Danish. It sounds like a Danish. What'd you say? Pie. It sounds like a Danish or pie. Now, if you were to buy, like, let's say you went to a deli and they served you a salami sandwich, a corned beef sandwich. They serve you a corned beef sandwich, and on the outside of the corned beef sandwich was two Danishes. So you might be like, whoa, cool idea. But it'd be very strange. You would say, no, the corned beef sandwich has to have the bread. You should have bread with the corned beef sandwich, not Danish. And they said, what do you mean? That's like bread. We made flour. We had water. We rolled it out. It rose. But you say, no, it's not. That's not really the same, right? It's not really how bread works, because in this case, it's so different, Rashba says, has all these things added ingredients inside like a kis. Okay, yeah.
So wouldn't like a slider, like a
small... Hold on. You're 3 steps ahead. Okay, let's go to the Rambam. The Rambam, source 11, says a little bit of a different definition. He says, if a certain type of dough that the Arabs make, it's not really like bread, so you make a mezonot. Similarly, so this is a dough that you kneaded with a K. You kneaded with, instead of with water, what did you use instead? Honey or oil or milk. And therefore he says, you make a mezonot. You make a mezonot. Unless you're a kovei sudan, you make a motzi. But otherwise you make a mezonot. What's the Rambam's definition of Pata Baba Kisnin? It's slightly different from the Rashba's. Demi? Yeah, it's a substitute for water. Right? Either completely replacing the water or overwhelming, right, with a different type of liquid to mix in. What does that sound like? What does that sound like? What type of food that we know does that sound like?
Cake.
Yeah, cake, cookies, right? Like the way that's what you do with cake. You put lots of like other ingredients, sugar, chocolate, whatever, cocoa powder, whatever it might be, all these different things to change it. The Beis Yosef quotes the Aruch in source number 12. The Aruch has a third definition. He says, "Pirish Ot B'Shem Rabbi Nohai Shapat Ba'Bikisnan Hem Kachin V'Pasha Bein Mitubela Bein Shein Mitubela Shau Simotak Kachin Yaveshin V'Kosim Otam B'Beit Mishdeh." He says these are things that you serve like in a pump or something like that. It's also kind of made from flour and water, but the texture is different. It's very crumbly, and we would call those
crackers.
Okay, crackers. So you can see in all these examples, like the Danish or the pie, or the cake and cookies, or the third example of crackers, they're all bread-like in the sense, again, they have dough and they have liquid, right? And they maybe start looking the same, but in the end, they really don't look the same. And the question we're going to ask here is a similar question we were asking before, which is, these three examples, is that the rule, or are those examples of the rule? Okay, that's the question. So look at the Shulchan Aruch, source number 13. Shulchan Aruch says like this, Pataba b'kissin, mevarech ala b'rei mini mezonot. You make a mezonot. Ulachara bracha achab ein shalosh. After the b'rei mini mezonot, you make a ein shalosh, fine. He says, v'machal v'menu shi'ur sh'acherim regilin d'kfo alav. If you eat an amount of food, al pataba b'kissin, that other people normally make a meal on, okay, so if you eat an amount of patava b'kisin, if it's the amount of people usually eat for a meal, the halacha is you have to make hamotzi birkan hamazon. So let's just pause there for a second. If you've heard this before, it's just not so shocking. If you haven't heard it before, it's shocking. This means that if you decide to eat a box of Oreos is a lot of food, you'll be full afterwards, just like the amount a normal person eats for a meal. The halacha is, if your plan is to eat a box of Oreos, you have to go to the box until you're dying, you make hamotzi, you eat the Oreos, and you make a birkat hamazon afterwards. Okay? That's a halacha. That's real halacha. Okay? Let's say you didn't plan on eating a whole box of Oreos. You thought you were going to start eating a little Oreo, a few Oreos. But then you're going to keep going, and you end up eating the whole box. You didn't make hamotzi, you made a brain minimum as a note at the beginning. But then you realize you ate the whole thing. So what do you have to do afterwards? You make a birkat hamazon. Okay? That's the halacha. Is that clear? Make sense? Questions about that? Benny?
It's not matter, like, I know each person is very different, amounts of food that
play. So again, so he's saying it's like, you try to standardize it. Like, if you have the, like, let's say you're, like, you can have a capacity to eat lots and lots of food. But for most people, that's like a meal. We usually say 4 or 5 kibbeitzim of food. Have you measured that? It's a whole machloket, but it's a significant amount. That's why I said a box of Oreos, right? So when you have a whole box of Oreos, you'd be like, whoa, that's a lot. You'd be like, not for me. That's a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gabe.
Is it Betty Evett to say Mishnah and then eat like more than the Mizonah to allow for it? And then to make
the whole situation is Betty Evett. If you didn't plan on it, right? Depends how much self-control you have, right? Some people have tons of self-control. They're like, I'm now going to sit down to a meal of a box of Oreo cookies. And that'll be my meal. So you make a mozi. Most people are like, I'm going to have 2 Oreos and then 2 more and then just 3 more. I'll just have 1 more after that and then 2 more. Oh, the whole box is gone. Shoot, hey, what happened again? You know, and a whole box of words. Okay, so it is, the whole situation is b'di'evet, but like you can't turn back the clock, like in kafaza, you know? It's kind of, I mean, if you want to take my opinion, it's kind of gross to like plan to have a meal of Oreo cookies. Like it seems like you should probably have, like, if you're already going to have a meal, you should plan a little differently, you know? Michael.
Let's say like you're going to have a meal and like it's like 80% Oreo cookies and like 20% like sour sticks.
Yeah, it's a good question. The Magen Avraham deals with that question. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a good tshuva about that. So the truth is that we generally posken that the things combine. Yeah, if you have a certain amount of the pava b'kissin, then you're going to add in all these other things. Rav Moshe has a tshuva in a more civilized. Maybe a situation where if you go to a wedding and like there's a smorgasbord at the beginning and you have mizono and as part of the smorgasbord, there's lots of other food, like other, you know, meat and there's, you know, like sushi, whatever it is. And then, you know, it turns out you ate a lot of food at the smorg, but only a relatively small portion of that was actual mizono. He thinks it's actually combined, so you'd have to bench in that situation. He thinks that's what he warns people, you should be washing in advance, whatever, but so there's such a thing. Okay? Yeah.
So what about like,
pancakes?
Like,
okay, so we'll get to that. We'll get to pancakes. Okay. Oh, the pancakes itself might not qualify, but waffles make more. Okay, so let's see the rest of the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, he says like this. V'imitchilaya b'datol lachol me'me'atu b'irach b'rim. There's no other hargach. Oh, I read. I did it already. Okay, the last 2 lines. V'imachal shiur shachrim ein kovim alav avo bishu kovei alav ein avarech al b'rim. There's no other bracha chamin shalosh tebata daitla daitla daitlo adam. If you eat the normal amount, even though you, let's say you eat a small amount, but it's the opposite situation you guys asked before. If you eat a small amount, but other people normally eat that amount, so fine. Okay, now look at this as a Siv Zayin. So what is Pata Babi Kisan? He just said the halach of our Pata Babi Kisan, but what is Pata Babi Kisan? So he says, Pata Babi Kisan, he quotes like this, Yesh Mefarshim, Pasha Soikimin Kisim. Some say it's like a kiss. Took the next line. V'yesh Mim Shi Isa Shir Badvash Shamanu Halabu Mine Tavin. It's like you mixed all the ingredients in. And the Rama says, I got to lose the place. The Rama says, the Yeshabim said, oh, sorry, look, skip the Rama, skip the italics and go to the last part, three lines from the end. Okay, Balacha, he says, Kidivrei Kulam. So he quotes all three examples, all three opinions that we saw. He quotes them. Okay, give you a little quick pro tip. So pro tip, so how did I come up with the source sheet? How did I know that the Rashba and the Rambam and the Beit Yosef, you know, all these things? So I'll admit, I looked in the Shulchan Aruch, he said all three opinions, I just worked backwards and found the three opinions and presented them on the source sheet. So you have the three opinions in advance, and it looks like a summary, but I did it backwards, huh? Little tricks here and there. I don't know, was I allowed to do that? I think the magician doesn't reveal his tricks, but I think the teacher's allowed to. Okay? So the Shulchan Aruch was saying, see, the Lach was like all of them. He said, all these things that we give, that we apply the rule. So here's the question of the Shulchan Aruch. Is the Shulchan Aruch being machmir? Meaning, is he being strict that since we're not sure what Pat the Baba Kisten is, we have to follow all three opinions, so to speak? Or is he saying something more fundamental? The halacha, in fact, is like all three of them. Okay? And again, this is the similarity to the previous section of the shiur, where again you have a list of three things. Is it davka or lav davka? Okay, is it davka these three types of things, or could we expand it perhaps beyond those three things? Okay, I'm going to give you two scenarios that I want you guys to think about. One scenario is what we call chocolate chip challah. Okay, that used to be very popular. Is that still popular, chocolate chip challah? Okay. So chocolate chip challah, you can buy it at many bakeries. It's challah, but it has like a lot of sugar and a lot of chocolate chips in it. And a lot of people like to use it at the table for hamotzi on Shabbos night, or Friday night, or Shabbos afternoon. And it's great, and everyone goes, oh, this it's so good, this chocolate chip challah, I love it, it's so yummy. So people like to have it, such a sweet challah. Okay, that's one thing. The question is that bread? Or is that pata baba kisnin, and therefore really the bracha should be mizono, that maybe people shouldn't be bringing it home and making a hamotzi on that quote-unquote chaga jepchal. That's point number one. Question number two is, let's say you have something like a soft pretzel. A soft pretzel is a very interesting phenomenon, because a soft pretzel has flour, it has water, it rises, it's chewy, kind of like bread, but it's shaped in a funny shape. And it doesn't really seem to fit any of the three criteria that we mentioned before. It doesn't have a pocket filled with stuff. It's not kneaded with any other, you know, ingredients like oil or honey or milk or anything like that. And it's not crunchy, crumbly like a cracker. So maybe a hot pretzel isn't possible to kiss in. Maybe possible. You see what's happening. Jeremy's getting nervous. Maybe the halacha should be that you should have to do what with a hot pretzel? Wash and say hamotzi. Because it doesn't fit any definitions. Okay, so what I want to suggest is as follows. We suggest, okay, in the cases really, the other nafkamina is what we call mizono rolls. Mizono rolls are the other option, right? You go to a burger's bar now, and they say, sell you a hamburger with a bun, and they'll tell you that, I didn't experience this personally, but people told me, that, although I went to BBB, and they have, you know, like a secular waiter, I was going to wash on my bun, and he stopped me. He said, no, I don't need, like, you don't have to wash. It's a mizono roll. Like it's kneaded without water. It's kneaded with other ingredients, like juice or whatever it might be. So is a mizono roll mizono, right? Because after all, it fits the definition. Or would you think maybe in some situation you have to make a mozi? Let's tease it out and we'll see people actually say these things. Here's the svaras, okay? If you think the rules are dafka, these three things are dafka, these things are pata b'kisnin, meaning unless you have a huge amount of these foods, you make mizonot, then that means a mizono roll is mizonot. Because the mizono roll qualifies by the definitions that the Shulchan Aruch gives us, it qualifies as pat baba kisten. Make sense? Okay, chocolate chip challah, by the way, also, would therefore be mizonot. Okay, it's two sides of the same coin. It would also be mizonot. That's if you think dafka. Make sense? Because you just follow the rules. If it fits into the rule, fits into the category, it's mizono. If, though, you think that the rule is maybe something else, that the three examples are merely examples of something, we have to ask ourselves, what are the examples of? what would those be examples of, if they're just examples? As opposed to bread, which is X, these are Y. What's the X and the Y?
Sweet.
Daniel. Okay, so maybe pato bekisna as opposed to bread is this the meal food or is it the snack food? Right? And these are just examples. The pato bekisna things are just examples of snack foods. One type of snack food puts things in the middle, like a pie or a Danish, right? It just takes the same, it takes the same bread ingredients, but makes it into something else. Or it makes it crumbly or whatever it does, right? But fundamentally, those are just different examples of snack foods that people have in their areas, right? Whereas the bread is the fundamental, like, you know, staple of every meal that you serve. So Daniel suggests, when they sell you chocolate chip challah, the answer is in the definition. It says they called it challah. So even though you have a lot of sugar in there, and even if chocolate chips in there, and it's, by the definitions, you know, the technical definitions, it seems to be part of a kistin. But the world sees that as challah, and therefore you can make hamotzi. Whereas the hot pretzel, you're saying, Jeremy, you can relax, right? You don't have to worry about washing the hot pretzel because everyone knows the hot pretzel is a snack food, right? In fact, you know, like if you go, like it will say under the, like, you know, under the meal things, it'll be like hamburger or hot dog, whatever, and under snacks it says hot pretzel, right? So that would be the svara difference. That make sense? Questions about that? Okay, so it's nice svara. Let's see if people actually say it. So look at the bir halacha source number 14. The bir halacha says like this: Halacha kedivrei kulam, ayin bechidush Rabbi Kiva Eger, shehiksha, amay lo katav hamachaber de yari shamayim yetei de kulam. Why doesn't he say this idea? Like if you're yari shamayim, you should fulfill all them. Meaning the language of the Shulchan Aruch is difficult because the Shulchan Aruch says the halacha is like all of them. That's a weird thing to say. The halacha is like all of them. You should paskin. You paskin the Rambam. You paskin the Rashba. How do you paskin? So you might say, a Yare Shamayim, somebody who's a God-fearing person, they should try to fulfill all the different shittos. That's the language you normally would use. This is strange language to say that halacha is like all of them. He says, must be, therefore he says, if a Ma'amar Mordechai Miyashbo, so the Sefer Ma'amar Mordechai responds to Rabbi Kiva Eger and says like this, the Kevim de lo Niskar Beheder Shechokim HaPoskim Bazeh, since it never says explicitly that the Poskim argue in this matter, it's possible they would agree with one another. It's possible they would agree with one another. How is it possible that the Rashba and the Rambam and the Aruch and the Aruch that we saw, how could they possibly be agreeing with one another? They say three completely different things. How would you explain it? What shita does the Be'er Halacha, what approach does the Be'er Halacha seem to have here? Ezra? Exactly. If they're just giving you examples, so they can perfectly can agree. They say, I have one example, I have another example. Oh, in my area, we have another example. But yeah, fundamentally, sure, of course I'd agree with your example too. I was just giving my idea. This is what we have in my neighborhood. Then in your neighborhood, maybe they have something else. So that's what Baron Lach is suggesting, based on this Ma'amar Mordechai, based on the Kash of Bekiva Eger, this is the pshat, their pshat in the Shulchan Aruch. The pshat in the Shulchan Aruch going to them is that these three opinions fundamentally agree with each other. They're just examples. And therefore, as long as you're having a... this food is a meal food, okay, then fundamentally you make hamotzi. You make hamotzi. If it's not a meal food, then it'd be snacks, it's fine. Okay? One second. I want to show you another line of Be'er Halacha, just the underlined line there in the next paragraph here before source 15. It says, V'prat shalech hamahu in asoi bizmaninu l'kinuach l'ta'anug. Kishmo shizach, oh, this is talking about, we should need a patwa, v'kizna v'rak v'svoa v'lachm gamorhu. So he's talking about a type of doughy Purim delicacy, but he wants to point out that it shouldn't be, it should really be like bread. They use it like bread, they talk of bread, they don't say it's just like a snack. And that seems to be along the same lines, that even though technically it might fit the bill as Patla Pakistan, if it's used like bread, so then it should be bread. Okay? And the other way of looking at it, again, the other way of looking at it is, one second. mm, no other place. Okay, I'll skip that source. The idea would be that if the other way of looking at it would be that if you feel that these are not dafka, that they are dafka, that they actually theoretically disagree with each other, we're just going to pass them like all three, so then it'd be okay. So again, so those people who want to eat mizonot rolls and make an actual mizonot, okay, so that's perfectly fine. You can make, there's a way of approaching the Shulchan Aruch and understanding that way. That you can actually make a mizonot on mizonot rolls. The only thing you have to be careful of is what? If you don't want to wash. Exactly. How much are you actually going to eat? If you have to be careful. You don't eat so much of it. But if you don't eat so much, then it's possible that you make a mizonot. Okay? Logically speaking, though, if you're going to say such a thing, I think the logical extension, that no one would ever say such a thing, I've never heard anyone actually do it, the logical extension then would be that you have to make hamotzi and hot pretzel, which would be very strange. Be a very strange idea. So the truth is that although there are many poskim who say that clearly the hashkachas have mizonot rolls, they have this whole thing, a sticker, mizonot, many, many people resist making a mizonot on the mizonot rolls because I think this is the logic, that you look at these three opinions and you say that. I wanted to talk one more thing practically, then not methodological. In terms of pizza, just mention pizza because pizza is sort of like the home run question here. Why is pizza such a strange thing? The way we practice with pizza, I think, fits in very nicely with this as well, which is as follows. What's the standard for making hamotzi on pizza?
Two slices.
Two slices. Okay. I told my share earlier this, what I call the Bnei Akiva NCSY rule of pizza. What does that mean? It means that when they have an event and they say everybody comes and gets pizza, they think that a meal is two slices of pizza. That's just how it works. That's how the budget works. Never been in a Bnei Akiva NCSY event where they give you more than two slices of pizza. This is how it goes. So why? Why is that the thing? Why all of a sudden we say two slices, you wash, but less than two slices, you don't wash? It's the same food. So logically, if it's the same food, you should be consistent with the food. Either it's a hamotzi food or it's a mizonot food. So what's the answer, Jeremy? It's all in how you use it. Exactly right. It's all about how you use it. If you're using that same food as a meal, then fundamentally it's a meal food, and therefore in this context you'd have to wash the bench. If you're using that food as a snack, so then you do it. So certain foods are 100%. If you take a loaf of bread, right, and you're going to, let's say it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon, or let's say it's 5 o'clock, you're going to have snack time, and you just have to grab a loaf of bread. Okay, but bread is bread, right? You can't really argue that bread is snack food, so it doesn't really depend on your use of it. It's fundamentally going to be hamotzi. But if it's a food that sort of goes in between, then maybe it would depend on how you actually use it. Okay, so again, methodologically, just to point out again, what we tried to show here was that in certain areas of halacha, when you see either a list, like we saw in the Gemara and Bracha about Birkat HaGomel, the four different reasons for benching Birkat HaGomel, or even in a later sources, like the Shulchan Aruch, who lists three different opinions, in terms of analysis, the question will often be, is the list dafka or lav dafka? Do we take the list literally, and that will have certain implications? Or do you take the list more as a paradigms, as examples of something, and then that will result in different halakhic conclusions depending on the situation? Questions, and then we'll stop. Yeah.
With like that model, then like chocolate hollow thing, like even if we say chocolate hollow is like definitely mizonot, because like you're doing it for your Shabbos.
Exactly. So that logic, according to the logic, you'd say chakchip challah. If I go by the sheet that it says, how do I use this food? Since they're selling to me as challah, I put it on my challah board. I cut it. I put salt on it. I made it, right. So you make a mozi on it. Of course, that's what you're presenting to the meal. Like, what a great, right? What's the best compliment you can give someone about their challah? This challah is so good. It tastes like cake, right? So okay, but you're using challah, so that's how it works. Yeah.
But can you use actual
cake? I don't know if you have actual cake. So pancakes is a slightly more complicated question because pancakes has a shaila about surah tapat. It's actually have the form of bread because it comes from the batter that sort of like spreads out. There's a shaila with pancakes, I think, about does it have surah tapat. I think waffles, you'll see more poskim who actually think that waffles you should probably have to wash them. I don't think we buy pancakes you have to do this. By the way, this doesn't apply to pasta. There's any amount. Pasta is not pasta but bakistan, even though it also comes in the same ingredients. The format and the way it's cooked is boiled as opposed to baked, so you never have a shadow with pasta really about those things. Yes, last question. I think it's a stop. Yeah, get up.
So I don't really know like how challah is actually made, but don't you use eggs at some point during the eating when that...
Okay, good. So the truth is, I think one question I think is, first of all, you don't have to, but you can, And the question is, how much would it be? We skipped some things, right? There's more details here. Some of it has to do with the proportions. Like, how much egg? Is the egg overwhelming or is the egg not overwhelming? But I think if you take the approach that we're suggesting, right, the lav dafka approach, so it works out very nice anyways. It doesn't matter how much egg. If I serve the challah, it's challah. So it's challah. You know? Okay, guys, what's up here? Let's go.